Sirs, moms, ladies and gents, welcome back to the Redcoat History Podcast with me, Chris Parkinson. Firstly, I want to apologise that I wasn't able to post a podcast episode last week. The truth is, with having a full-time job as well as podcasting and running the YouTube channel and having two young kids, sometimes I just can't get it done in time. Podcasting, as you probably realise, doesn't actually make me any money whatsoever. So if you want to support the show, please do join my Patreon over at patreon.com/redcoathistory. Costs $5 a month and you get my YouTube videos and my podcasts early and without adverts. This week's podcast is actually the audio from an upcoming YouTube video I've been working on about the British regimental system. Let me not talk too much. I think let's just crack on.
The gallant South Essex.
One of the great things about a battalion such as this is that it's had its headquarters in the same place for more than 200 years.
Regiment, where'd you serve?
33rd.
The British Army, man for man, probably the best the world has ever seen. Yep, I know that statement will upset many people, but I am British and I wear my bias on my sleeve.
How dare you? How dare you?
But what has made the British Army so damn good over the centuries? Well, other than training, experience, and the fact that as Brits are just bred so damn tough, I have a theory. The regimental tradition, esprit de corps, the honour of the regiment. These are all terms you might have heard and are often used within British military circles. They've been major factors in enabling soldiers to prevail, often when massively outnumbered or in terrible conditions.
You're doing real good, boys!
But what do these terms really mean and why are they so important? A special thanks to Dr. Chris Bryce for researching and co-writing this episode. There's a link to his books in the description below. So I suppose the first thing we have to do is actually explain what exactly is a regiment, because it's not quite as straightforward as it may sound. Now, the first thing to say is it does differ between eras and between branches. For example, the organisation of a regiment in the cavalry or the artillery is very different to the infantry. But for now, I'm going to focus mainly on the infantry. At its simplest, it's an administrative formation of officers and men designed to be the building blocks of a larger force in time of war. Traditionally within the British Army, it was the largest permanent organisational structure. The regiment, as we know it, goes back to the 16th century, but has echoes of the earlier mercenary forces that fought throughout the Middle Ages. Originally, the regiment bore the name of its colonel or whichever nobleman had raised it. But as standing armies became more common, various systems for identifying regiments became used. A numbers system was soon implemented, and regiments were given names such as the 1st or the 33rd Regiments of Foot. Subsequently, they often bore a county, location, or royal title in brackets after the number. For example, the regiment that famously fought at Isandlwana and Rorke's Drift was the 24th, then brackets, 2nd Warwickshire Regiment of Foot. In 1881, the Childers reforms finally saw regimental numbers replaced by names, often with a county association. Thus, the 24th then became the South Wales Borderers. Now, I know it's confusing, but bear with me. Side note, there's a big debate about what constitutes the oldest regiment in the British Army. Now, it gets very confusing, and it depends maybe how you phrase the question, and of course, where your own regimental loyalties lay. I have a video coming out next week that I think will finally answer that question, so if you're interested to know, subscribe, hit that notification bell. You might be very surprised by the answer. I suspect that unless you're in the British Army yourself or a bit of a historian, you probably won't have heard of the regiment. But suffice it to say, a number of regiments in the modern army can trace their history back to the 1600s. Nowadays, though, the majority of the old regiments have been amalgamated into multi-battalion units, such as the Royal Anglian Regiment or the Mercian Regiment. It's sad that most of the old county regiments have fallen by the wayside, but their traditions do live on.
Has Wellington nothing to offer me but these Amazons?
Now, of course, most armies around the world use some sort of regimental structure. But there's always been greater importance attached to the regiment in the British military system than in many of its counterparts abroad. But why is this? Well, there are a number of factors, but perhaps we have to look at the very nature of the British Army itself. It is, and always has been, a small force, not a huge one like the Continental Armies of France or Prussia. Therefore, a smaller unit such as a regiment slash battalion of around 800 to 1,000 men was always going to make more sense. Not only was the British Army smaller, but it was recruited by voluntary enlistment alone, with no real form of compulsory service until 1916. With us being an island and the army could generally afford to be smaller, not have to worry about engaging in major European conflicts. Of course, there were notable exceptions, such as the French Revolutionary and Napoleonic Wars, but the main use of the army was for garrison duties, support of the civil power, and of course small colonial campaigns, which we cover extensively on this channel. So under such circumstances, it made more sense to be able to deploy smaller units such as battalions on an ad hoc basis when needed, rather than large units like brigades and divisions. These small units were then often on their own, based in the far reaches of empire, places where their own unique character could flourish and tribalism become embedded. When localization and the county regiments came into being, this helped with recruiting, and it appealed to this mentality of representing your local area. As such, it became common for generations of men to serve in the same county regiments down the centuries. This really led to a sense of the regimental family. Linked to the idea of regimental pride, of course, is the history of the regiment. Pride is taken in previous victories and battle honours. Indeed, if you remember our video about the colours, you'll recall that such battle honours take pride of place upon the colours of the regiment. Just to recap, the spirit of a regiment is embodied in its colours. Until 1881, they would serve the practical purpose of being a rallying point in battle. These days, the colours are still incredibly important to the regiment, but they're no longer carried into battle, of course. Particular days of historical significance, of course, are still commemorated also. One of the best known being Minden Day. We haven't covered the Battle of Minden on the channel yet, but it was part of the Seven Years' War and was fought on the 1st of August 1759 against the French and Saxons. And so, on the 1st of August, the successors of the regiments that fought there decorate their headdress and regimental colours with roses. Why roses, I hear you ask? Well, on the morning of the battle, when the British infantry and artillery were advancing forward, they marched through gardens and found wild roses in the hedgerows. Being the old romantics they were, the soldiers picked the roses and stuck them on their uniforms. But such commemorative days don't always remember victories. My Wand Day, particularly commemorated by the Royal Berkshire Regiment, remembered a defeat in Afghanistan where the regiment had suffered heavy casualties. Somewhat strangely, in later years, May Wand Day was celebrated as a family's day with a sports day and an all-ranks dance being part of the festivities. This intense regimental pride had a downside or a positive, however you look at it, regimental rivalries. A good commander, of course, knew how to use this to his advantage. There's an incident during the Abyssinian campaign of 1868, covered on this channel, where General Sir Robert Napier did just that. The campaign was fought in difficult terrain. It was hot, dusty, and mountainous. Unsurprisingly, the soldiers began to grumble, particularly in the case of the 33rd Foot who were leading the advance. At one point, some of the men refused to move any further and disobeyed their officers. Napier's response showed not only that he understood his men, but also the regimental rivalry that existed. He removed the 33rd from the advance and redeployed them to the rear of the column. Therefore, the glory of leading the advance, for that was how Napier painted it, would fall to the 4th King's Own Regiment of Foot. There already existed a rivalry between the two regiments, exacerbated by the fact that the 33rd were from Yorkshire, while the 4th were a Lancashire regiment.
You bastard.
Napier's actions increased the rivalry between the regiments that went on for decades more. And these regimental rivalries can literally last centuries.
Never forget.
Even into the late 20th century, soldiers of the Scottish Black Watch Regiment would be taunted with the cry of "Broken Square." This was a reference to the Battle of Tamai all the way back on the 13th of March 1884, when their defensive square was broken by Sudanese warriors. Although these tough Scots were able to reform the square, there was a certain humiliation in the fact that it had happened at all. The fact that soldiers would use it as an insult and even start a punch-up over it generations later, after the event had taken place, illustrates perfectly the enduring nature of regimental pride and esprit de corps. And aside, of course, from the history, from the rivalry, from the esprit de corps, there are other things that make British regimental traditions so unique. Some regiments have traditions around the national anthem. The officers of the 4th, 7th Royal Dragoon Guards, for example, used to talk throughout the anthem. Then there are the regimental mascots. The Royal Welsh and their predecessor units adopted a goat as their mascot since the 18th century. According to the National Army Museum website, this dates back to an incident at the Battle of Bunker Hill in 1775 during the American War of Independence. Splitters. A wild goat is thought to have strayed onto the battlefield and led the Royal Welsh Fusiliers colour party from the field. In 1884, Queen Victoria presented the regiment with a Kashmir goat from her royal herd. Now the Royal Welsh get all their goats as a gift from the monarch. Technically, this means that they're not mascots at all, but actually ranking members of the regiment.
Today's has his own military identity card, his own full-time valet with insignia of Goat Major.
In fact, it's my understanding that the Goat in the Royal Welsh is a Lance Corporal and has to be saluted by lower ranks. Apologies to the regiment if I've got that wrong. In fact, I've heard stories of the Goat and other mascots being promoted and demoted depending on their behaviour. This is why studying the British Army never gets boring, guys. It's endlessly fascinating. There are so many great stories like this. And it's this quirkiness, this love of tradition, this deep history, this esprit de corps, and this regimental rivalries that, in my opinion, helps to make the British Army so damn effective. As I said at the beginning, arguably the best man for man in the entire world. So there we have it, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Like I said at the beginning, if you want to support the show, please do consider joining the Patreon page over at patreon.com/redcoathistory. As the podcast actually costs me money and doesn't make any, that would be a great way for you to support the show and allow me to keep doing a weekly or bi-weekly podcast. Hopefully, I'll be back with you next week. All right, guys, take care. Bye-bye.